Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
We are back on 95.7 The Game. Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky, Nick Friedell in for Damon Bruce today, and just sort of talking about what the future of the Warriors looks like, what they actually might be able to do this offseason to sort of put themselves back into the conversation in a way that they haven't been throughout this year. And, you know, I think sometimes when we talk about this stuff, it's hard to get past what we are seeing because this team's been a topsy-turvy mess all year long, and it's hard to imagine that one partially injured player could change all of that. But I do think sometimes we underestimate the effect of even a non-fully healthy Klay Thompson-level player. So that part of it kind of interests me because I just look at a season that, you know, right now it's easy to find 3 or 4 games that even this Warriors team probably should have won, and those 3 or 4 games would put them in 6th or 7th right now. So the notion that getting back Klay and presumably improving this team in other ways doesn't get them further than 6th or 7th is, I don't know. To me, I think it probably does. But let's put that aside for 1 second, because I want to go back to what got us into this, which was answers that Steve Kerr gave us in his interview. And if you miss Steve, we'll have the full thing for you about an hour from now. So no worries about that. But specifically, we were talking about Klay coming back. And he kind of talked about, you know, not knowing exactly what you're going to get. But that, to some degree, Klay is still the known, and that's better than the unknown. And I think that led him to bring up an old rumored trade that you probably have not forgotten about but may not have heard from in a while. Let's hear that from Steve.
When you know something, that's really valuable. You know, when you don't know something, then it's all just conjecture. You know, so and I bring that up by saying, look, you know, if we know that we have the best backcourt in the league in Steph and Klay, and I'll just take this back, you know, 6 years ago, and we know we have a top 5 defense in the league, then we should probably stay firm with this instead of trading Klay Thompson, okay? Because if you trade Klay Thompson for Kevin Love, which was, you know, that was the rumor 6 years ago, now you got all this stuff that you're just trying to predict. How good is this team going to be with Steph Curry and Kevin Love versus what do you know right now? That's how I look at the league. And unfortunately, you don't always know what's in front of you, you know, because you know, usually you're in a position where you're trying to build a team and trying to figure things out. But when you know something, that's valuable. So that's how we operate.
Go ahead, Ray.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, they didn't know that the Love trade was a bad idea. They just surmised it. And to their credit, they surmised it in the face of a proponent of the trade who pays everybody salaries. That is
what they knew,
right?
What they knew, and I think that's what Steve's saying, what they knew was what they had. They couldn't know for sure whether the Love trade would make them better or worse at that moment, but they knew they liked what they had an awful lot, right?
Well, I think they liked it. I don't think they knew that it would be that. Because remember, it wasn't just Klay Thompson who was in that deal. It was also Draymond Green.
That's right.
And that's why that trade really didn't get made. Because I think there might have been less objection to the trade if it had just been Love for Thompson, because Love was more of a known than Thompson was. But when you throw in Green, who they sort of had an inkling could be useful, I think that made that, you know, a non-starter with everybody but Lacob. And to his credit, Lacob backed off of that when enough people said, you can't do this. So
that might, in fact, be his greatest display of quality ownership, is the moment where he wanted a thing and he had smart basketball people tell him that wasn't the right thing to do. And instead of being the traditional owner who says, shut up, I want the thing, he let the basketball people make the decision. Always smart. To get back to Kerr quickly, what Nick then had the chance to ask him in a follow-up was, that's interesting, you just said all that about Klay Thompson and Kevin Love from 5 years ago, but are you perhaps really talking about James Wiseman right now? And this is sort of how Kerr responded to that.
Do you feel like you know enough about James where you would stand on the table and say, hey, guys, he's 20, we see the talent, let's keep him out of any possible trade conversations?
Well, you know, yeah, that was well done, well played, you know, Nick.
He's a professional,
how many
Steve.
Are truly untouchable, you know, in the NBA in terms of a trade. I don't know. LeBron,
seven.
Steph, and Giannis, and that's about it. I mean, yeah. if you really want to get down to it. So everybody is tradable. Will Chamberlain got traded, Kareem got traded. You never know what's going to happen, what's going to come out, and obviously that's Bob's job. But, you know, in this business, you know, you never know how it's going to play out. But what you value is good young talent, and James is a really, really promising young talent. And we love him on a personal level with his work ethic and his maturity. So we've got a really good prospect, and we're excited about him.
Deftly navigated, if I may say so, by Steve Kerr, also a former media professional. It's interesting, though, that nobody's untradeable came quickly and well before the, but we also like James. I do think that is noteworthy. Steve Kerr did want to make sure no one heard him say James Wiseman is untradeable. He did not want that to be sort of the thing he had been interpreted as saying. That being said, I'm not even sure, and as we thought about it in the break after he said that, I'm not even sure there are three untradeable guys in the league, because as Nash pointed out to me, you know, what if the Lakers could get Giannis for LeBron? Like, even those untradeable guys are sort of tradable for each other. So, no one is untradeable. That's true, but that call me crazy. What do you guys think? That sounded to me like a guy who realizes that a trade of James Wiseman is still something that's on the table.
It sounded to me like a guy who knows they talk about everything all the time, and Kerr doesn't get the deniability of, well, that's Bob Myers' job, because whenever a conversation like that comes up, Kerr is automatically in the room. And he automatically has input. So it is partially him. What he did was be mindful of the table of organization, which is that the coach doesn't make the trades, but he gets to have significant input in them. And on a trade like that, the other guy who gets to have significant input is the owner. Even if he can be talked off the ledge, he's still a guy who's going to get to have his voice heard. So, you know, Kerr is part of all of that. And he should be. So when he says, well, that's what Bob does. Well, yeah, Bob does sort of the moving of boxes. But when it comes time to either sell or buy the house, Steve Kerr's got a vote. And there aren't very many people in that building who do. So he's got somewhere in the neighborhood of 30% say of how that goes. So, yeah, it was a completely legitimate question, which surprises me given the quality of of Nick's work by and large.
Wow. Wow.
It's just love. But Matt, I'll tell you what that answer was. That was a very media savvy person who wanted to kind of stay right in the middle while continuing to prop up Wiseman because he's well aware of the confidence struggles that have gone on. But as usual, Ray has exactly the right read, because when you're trying to focus in on what the Warriors may or may not do this summer and how the future unfolds with Wiseman as part of whatever core they may be building moving forward, so much of this is going to get Steve's either blessing or he's going to have the ability to say, no, I don't know if that's the move we want to make. So my read on it was just he was trying to leave the door open to any and all possibilities while also trying to continue to pump up a 20-year-old who's facing some career, at least altering in the short term, surgery, who needs that jolt of confidence from his head coach.
But it's also a ongoing conversation, and they're both having it right with each other. It's not like they're talking to Larry Harris about this all the time. They're talking to each other about it, and they're talking to each other about it conceptually, practically, you know, in all the ways you can talk about it. And since there is no guarantee that they won't get the drop-dead deal that Brian Burke used to talk about, they have to operate, A, as though he's theirs for the long term, but the long term could be one phone call. And the Brian Burke reference I made is him basically negotiating with great players as a hockey general manager in a bunch of different places. And his line all the time was, I love you to death, and I don't make calls to try to trade you, but if somebody calls me and offers me 10 first round draft choices, I'm driving you to the airport. So, you know, that's how this works. And I think they constantly have that conversation and 100 others, because that's what they do when they're sitting around. You know, they're not exchanging recipes. You know, they're talking about the immediate and long-term future of the basketball team. And that means involving everybody in trade discussions, or at least conceptual, you know, player movement things. And I am fairly certain that that Stephen Curry is part of those too, just because you have to allow for the possibility that either, you know, his game suddenly deteriorates, or he becomes disillusioned, or all of a sudden Charlotte makes a play that they can't possibly match. I mean, they consider even the most ridiculous scenarios, because it's their job to.
All right, I want to consider some scenarios as well. But first, I do want to remind our listeners that this is the only radio program where you're going to get not only a reference to NHL general manager Brian Burke, but Larry Harris catching strays for no reason in the same practically sentence, if not minute. Also, the only radio show where you're currently going to have a chance to win $1,000. It's time for the Splash for Cash contest. Here's your chance to win it, $1,000. All you got to do is text the code word HEALTHY to 72881. That's HEALTHY to 72881. Brought to you by Outdoor Supply, Hardware, Patio, Garden, and more at Osh.com. It's a multi-state contest. Message and data rates apply. All right, so let's look at this actual roster here. We went through it last segment quickly. Your starting five is almost locked in with Steph, Clay, Wiggins, Draymond, and Wiseman. The back end of your bench is virtually locked in with Poole, Lee, Pascal, Looney, Nico, and Juan. And maybe Smiley is officially not guaranteed for next year, but he is under contract for two more seasons, I believe. So my expectation is he'll be there, sitting right where he's sitting now, getting about the same number of minutes, which is none unless the game is totally out of hand. We essentially have two, maybe three spots in the middle of this roster, and this team desperately needs to find sixth, seventh, and eighth men. Kelly Oubre returning is one of those possibilities, but I think as the year has gone on, we have reasons to believe that's less and less likely. Nick, would you confirm that that is less and less likely?
It doesn't feel too likely, Mr. Kolsky.
So let's say Kelly Oubre doesn't really want to be here. because he doesn't want to come off the bench, and fair enough. He's a young player, has a chance to earn a lot of money and start somewhere. I get it. In your mind, what would the top priorities be to turn, like you still want to turn Oubre's contract slot into something, right? And it's the biggest money weapon you have to use this offseason. So what would you want to use it on?
a star player that doesn't appear readily available right now. That's the real issue to me, guys, is that even if you're trying to figure out what moves you'd want to make on this roster, I don't see a move. I can only speak for myself. And this includes Wiseman and the Minnesota pick and some other picks and Wiggins for Bradley Beal. I don't see a move this offseason right now that puts the Warriors from in the play-in conversation, of which they're in now, back up to the top or near the top of the Western Conference. I've watched this team closely all season long, and I just don't think that there is that one move or there are two moves that push them all the way back to the top. Do I think they'll be better, Matt, with that trade exception that maybe they get for Kelly Oubre if he does go somewhere else? Could they add somebody? Certainly. But I just don't see that player being that much of a difference maker, and that's why I'm more tepid with how I view the future than I feel like a lot of people in the fan base.
Well, so I think here's the thing. I mean, the situation I'm talking about, trying to turn Kelly Oubre into something, it's not going to be the difference in terms of getting into title contention. I think, and maybe this is something we should talk more about, because I now that I'm saying it, I don't feel like we actually address it that much. The Warriors getting back into title contention, if it is to happen, it's going to be because of Klay Thompson, Andrew Wiggins, and James Wiseman. I mean, fundamentally, like, they'll have to do other things. They'll have to improve the bench. They'll have to add a sixth and seventh man. But to really make them a contender, that's going to be because Klay is right back to being Klay. Andrew Wiggins continues to play good defense and you know, score at an 18 to 20 point per game rate, even if it's not that exciting. And James Wiseman is a lot better, particularly on defense. Like, that's how that happens. But let's forget contention, because I think contention is going to depend on those guys, not to mention Steph's continuing to play at a ridiculous level. To me, I'm just asking, if that's my starting five, what's the best version of the bench and how do I get there?
Can I bring out the cold water bucket right now?
Sure.
If we are focused on Klay Thompson coming back and being Klay Thompson, of which Klay has already said to start next year, he's already laid it down that he's not going to be the Klay of old. But Matt, Klay is almost secondary to, can you get more out of Wiggins and can you get more out of Wiseman? To me, with Wiggins, he's been a little bit better defensively, but throughout much of the year, he looks a lot like the Andrew Wiggins that we saw through most of the time in Minnesota. There are hot streaks where he looks awesome. There are cold streaks where he's a non-factor, although I would agree that the defense has been a little bit better. And with Wiseman now, nobody, and certainly we just talked to Steve, nobody's saying that he can't play or the talent's not there. My argument always, all season, is that his confidence has been shaky and that the Warriors thought he was going to hit the ground running, and that has not been the case. And now you're talking about a 20-year-old center who's going through a meniscus injury that's going to put him out for months. So that's why I think next year, even if they got the right bench pieces in here, to go from the 10 seed to the 2 or 3 seed is just a gigantic stretch for the organization.
Well, just because you use that exact phrasing, I'm just going to point out that is literally exactly what the Phoenix Suns have done. So, I actually agree with you. I'm not even disagreeing with you. That my question isn't even about contending at all. It's just about you're going to make some moves. and you want to make the team better, and you want to make it as good as you can. So, you know, if Nick Friedell was in charge and the Wizards are hanging up on you, like what things in terms of trying to build out the bench to make it as good as you can? You know, if Kelly Oubre is not with it, what type of players are we looking for? Because I'm not sure you're looking for a Kelly Oubre replacement, with all due respect. I was saying to Ray, I think maybe my number one priority would be finding a big man, especially now that, you know, as Steve said, the Wiseman timetable is probably pushed back even a little more.
A veteran big man, too.
Yeah.
I think a guy who could be that tutor for James that he hasn't had, because guys, even in the beginning of the year, it was Kevon Looney and Marquise Chris, and then Chris gets hurt a week in and they don't have that depth. I don't see Pascal's long-term future here. So Matt, I think the answer for me would be a vet big man, a guy you can lean on for 15 minutes or so a night maybe, and then a 3-and-D perimeter defender. But here's the problem. Everybody wants those guys. Everybody wants more shooting. So the volley I would push back to you would be, I'm not sure where it's coming from, because I'm not sure where the money to attract those type of players that you do need is going to appear from. Agree that Oubre is probably not the right fit, and even if they do get that trade exception in return.
Yeah, I mean, if they get that trade exception, it could be in the $20 million range. So the money should be enough. But then the question is, you have to acquire that guy by trade, and how do you create the value, right?
Right.
To get another team to send you someone, unless you're lucky enough to find a team that is looking for nothing more than salary cap relief, and I don't know that the Rockets are going to make Christian Wood available. So that option might not be available for you. But yeah, you will have that money to work with. And I think when you talk veteran big man, like, I'm not sure that Marc Gasol would be available, but that type of guy could come to you at more of a mid-level exception rate. So veteran big man is easier. It's the 3-and-D. It's the, like, high-level shooter who can play defense that's going to be difficult for them to find. And I do wonder if the draft might be the closest they can get to that with, you know, somebody in the Jalen Suggs category, I guess, if you're at 4. He at least plays D. I don't know if he's 3 yet, but plays D, can handle the ball a little bit. That could be interesting. No?
I think it could be, but, you know, I don't think Suggs will be there for them, because I think he's going to go 2 or 3, I think. And as a result, if he's 2 or 3, he belongs to Minnesota or somebody else who's probably not going to be inclined to want to deal with
the Warriors.
The Warriors
can only pick 4th or 5th.
Yeah, so they've got they've got to shop down market a little more, and the draft starts to get nebulous after 5. So I think they almost have to have, and I only say this because I don't have a better comp in my head. They need a Draymond level get at 6 or 7 or 8, because I'm going to guess Minnesota's going to – let me finish. I'm going to guess that Minnesota's going to get to keep that pick. I just have a feeling.
Oh, you're talking about their pick at 7 or 8. You're talking about the Warriors' pick.
Yeah.
Wow, okay. But then they're going to have to lose a lot to some bad teams down the stretch to end up with a pick that high. So that's interesting. Well, we got a break, Ray, so I want to get back to this as soon as we come back from said break. Specifically – is the draft maybe the best route for the Warriors to find some of these pieces they need for their bench? I still maintain that the Kelly Oubre contract better turn into something. What that is, perhaps we can figure that out right after this. It is Damon Ratto and Kolsky. Nick Friedell in for Damon Bruce today. We are sponsored by Outdoor Supply Hardware. Perk up your patio and save at Outdoor Supply Hardware. Right now, select Bistro and Rocker patio sets are $20 off. Illuminate pathways with solar stake lights, now 2 for $11. Outdoor Supply Hardware, with 12 great locations, online at osh.com.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
It's Damon Ratto and Kolsky. Nick Friedell in for Damon today. And just as we were going to break, Ray brought up an interesting point, which is that they may not get the Minnesota pick, something we all realize. And in that case, you know, one of their best ways to improve the team will be their own draft pick, which it actually depends on what happens in the play-in tournament. Like, assuming the Warriors get into the play-in tournament, if they win in the play-in tournament, they then, as I understand it, do not get a lottery pick. So you could finish 10th if you're the Warriors, but if you then win the two games to get into the 8th seed for the playoffs, you're now the 15th pick, right?
Yeah, and right now their record puts them, you know, in line to get that 15th pick. So let's just say...
No, right now, I think it's... Right now, it's... It depends if they win the play-in tournament. Right now, they're in the 14th spot because they're 9th. No, I just
looked at 16. They have the 16th best record, and they go, I mean, in terms of draft position.
I'm looking at tankathon.com.
I don't think it works that way, Ray, because all the playoff teams are out of the lottery. So
and I'm assuming
even though
they
have
one of those.
Well, no, but even though they have a better record than, for instance, Charlotte, who's the 8th seed in the East, they would also have a better draft pick because Charlotte won't be in the lottery.
Okay.
Right?
Well,
the lottery is non-playoff teams. But the point is, none of this really matters because the play-in matters here. If the Warriors win in the play-in tournament, their draft pick gets worse.
Okay, well, you know, okay, since we don't know that, let's move off of that. The thing I'm
Ray, what I'm telling you is that I know this. But here's the point. This franchise really doesn't want to win. Winning in the play-in tournament is a bad, bad thing to happen to the Golden State Warriors draft scenario, right? I mean, Nick, do you want to is losing in six games with a beat up roster to the Jazz or Suns, is that worth five drops and out of the lottery? I don't know.
If you have Steph Curry, guys, you're going to get into the postseason. That's what I believe. Because and Steve just said it again a little bit ago, they're going to go and they're on that tear that he's been talking about for a month and a half now. Oh, it's coming, it's coming, it's coming. They've won four in a row. They've got six games to close at the end of the season at home. This team, in my mind, is going to end up either in the 7th or 8th spot, which means all they have to do with a healthy Steph, if he can stay healthy, and Draymond, is win one game. So, in my mind, is it the best thing for the future to be in the postseason, Matt? No. But are they going to the postseason if Steph and Draymond have anything to say about it? Yes.
Yeah. So. No, you're right. I mean, that's all I was pointing out is that I didn't think about this. Because if they finish 9th, you just think, oh, well, they're 9th. They're in the lottery. Like, that works out kind of nicely. It gives them a second lottery pick. You know, maybe, heck, maybe if they really like the guy at 3, they could trade up from 5. Who knows? But actually, as you're saying, Nick, the overwhelming likelihood, given the softness of their schedule down the stretch and the fact that, you know, you like Steph and Draymond's chances in a play-in game an awful lot, odds are they will end up 7th or 8th when the playoffs get going. And that adds back into what Ray was saying earlier, that then they fall way down the draft order, because then the fact that their record's better than the bottom four of the East playoffs does come into play. They could end up picking like 20th, 21st, which at that point they might lose their pick, right? Like, there is a scenario where, after briefly thinking, you could have two lottery picks, you end up with no picks at all.
Where's the Price is Right trombone?
Oh, man. Like, this is all dawning on me live, guys, just so you know. But right now, for instance, okay, to your point, Nick, if they play well down the stretch here and pass Memphis and they end up in the 8th slot with a record, say, 4 games over .500, right now, The fourth seed in the East is four games over 500. So you could end up being the seventh seed in the West, which is to say six teams behind you, and better than all but three teams in the East, and that would mean you lose your draft pick. So, there is a lot to happen down the stretch here. And if the Warriors end up with no draft picks, I think, you know, the slim to none chances of getting back in contention drop much closer to none. So that's not a scenario we want. That's for sure.
I mean, the thing I was trying to get at is they're sort of in a position that no matter how this breaks, they're going to be in the middle of the draft or below. And that's a best case scenario because Stephen Curry will not permit this team to tank that, you know, even a play-in game, you know, let alone regular season games that get them out of the, you know, out of the play-in game entirely. So you're looking best case scenario at a draft where you don't really have access to a center unless you figure out a way to trade way up. Or you start looking for that 3-and-D guy, you know, maybe somebody like Scotty Barnes or who else was I thinking of? You know, if you wanted to roll the dice on Zaire Williams, because there are not a lot of good 3-and-D guys in this draft either. So you're really sort of, you know, if you're waiting, you know the best case scenario you've got is if you really sort of choose to overvalue Isaiah Jackson, the center at Kentucky. I don't know that there is help for the Warriors that makes sense in this draft at the two positions that they probably need most of all, which is that 3-and-D guy and the big guy. They're going to be taking somebody at another position and hoping they can sort of turn them into something.
Well, I do think they're, you know, 3-and-D, it's tough because 3-and-D, even if you have a prospect that you like as a 3-and-D prospect, like actually being a consistent high-level three-point shooter and consistent high-level defender at the NBA is something that usually takes time even for good prospects. So it's tough to say, oh, you're going to pick a guy 15th and he's going to immediately step in and be a regular rotational 3-and-D guy, you know, regardless. But I do think there are some players with enough skill and ability that you could see slotting into a bench role where they're asked to do some of those things, and Scotty Barnes is one of them. I mean, that kid, I think, has a chance to be special. I don't know that he'll fall to the middle of the draft, though. He looks like more a seventh or eighth pick to me, and I don't know that the Warriors will be able to get up there. I still do think, though, that, like, Kelly Oubre, whether he returns or you get something out of his departure, and these draft picks are pretty much going to be the ways you have to improve this team. So I think those are the things to start looking at. And who you draft with your own pick as the Warriors, you know, later in the draft, which hopefully will be in the 15 range, that to me probably depends on what you think you'll be able to get as it regards Kelly Oubre. If you think Kelly Oubre is going to be a part of this team in the long term, right? Well, then all of a sudden, you don't need the bench wing as much as you did. If you think the best option for Oubre is turning him into a big that you know is going to be available at $20 million a year or something in a trade or with a trade exception, then all of a sudden it looks like you need more of a wing or ball handling type with that draft pick. And you know, it's a weird scenario where maybe the Warriors are going to have to try to project what happens to them with free agency in order to know what they're looking for later in the draft.
I don't know. What do you
think? Either
I mean,
of you
Nick,
are welcome to jump in.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I was expecting Nick to say something at some point. He's been coasting on his good looks today. So and when
all
I
right,
say
all
good
right,
looks,
but this is all right. This is the problem, though. If we really want to get down to the issue with the Warriors, they have their top. They are top loaded in a major way. Their slots in the rotation right now at 6, 7, and 8 are filled by guys who, in theory, should probably be 9, 10, 11, and 12. And if you're not keeping Oubre and Matt, like we were saying, I don't think it's looking or sounding much like
it's not looking great.
Yeah. It's not looking great as far as Oubre's return goes. I just don't see where those players are going to come from. Maybe you get a draft pick, but as we've seen, Wiseman was the number two pick, guys. And I think we'd all agree that Wiseman was having a lot more ups and downs than anybody with the Warriors ever would have hoped for. They knew he was going to have some issues, but he's had even more struggles than I think they were expecting because of how little he had played coming into it. So all that being
quick
said.
Quick counterpoint counterpoint on that part of it, just on the part. For every Wiseman, there's a Tyrese Halliburton. And think how much he would help this team right now, right? So can you find somebody more in the Halliburton ready to help mode in this upcoming draft, I think is probably the question they have to answer, right?
And it's a much deeper draft, much deeper on its face than it had been coming into 6 months ago with the 2020 draft. So is that guy there, Matt? Yeah, but to find them, that's a whole different story.
It's always tricky. Otherwise, everybody would win championships because this would be easy. Speaking of how hard it is to draft important pieces of your franchise, look, we're going to get back to the Warriors in about half an hour. We got Steve Kerr to run back past you. Spent a great 20 minutes or so with the Warriors head coach earlier. That's coming up about 30 minutes from now. But coming up next, we got to get into this Niner draft pick situation a little bit. So I want to put it to both Nick and Ray and also to our audience at 888-957-9570. What would you do with the third pick in the draft if it was up to you? And what do you think the Niners will do? Are they the same thing? Are they different things? You tell me. 888-957-9570. It is Damon Ratto and Kolsky. Nick Friedell in for Damon Bruce today. And the name of our app has changed, but all the great content you already get from us and the great music, news, sports, and podcasts from across the country hasn't. If you've already downloaded the Radio.com app, it should update to Odyssey. If you haven't, what are you waiting for? Download the Odyssey app today. Get all the audio that matters to you. We can't wait for you to hear what's in store in a universe of audio. We are Odyssey. And we here at Damon Ratto and Kolsky are presented by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises. Now time for the Exergen temperature check. And right now it is 67 degrees and still rather sunny in Walnut Creek, California.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
We are back, Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game. Nick Friedell in for Damon today. We're going to get into the Niners. I just have to share with the people. Just as we were coming back, I looked at my iPad and noticed I had missed a text from Lucas. And I'm not sure the Warriors situation could be summed up any better than by the text I just received from Lucas, which says, Mo Wagner just cut by Boston, dubs ? So, you know, it's never great. Yeah, Leandro Barbosa may have used different words if that was the question being asked when he was asked about championships. But speaking of championships, the Niners were awfully close, man, with the very quarterback they still have under contract and who a lot of us believe will still be the quarterback under center week one of this season. But nevertheless, here we are with them set to take the quarterback of the future at the third pick. And I'm interested in where people in general stand on this. 888-957-9570, if you want to weigh in, what would you do with that third pick? And what do you think the Niners will do? But Ray, let me ask you, what would you do? What do you think the Niners will do?
A, they're going to take Justin Fields.
Very confident.
I'm pretty confident. I think the more I see smoke screens about Mac Jones here or Trey Lance there, the more I think that Fields is the guy they sort of locked in on early. And the only thing that would change that is if the Jets somehow managed to pass on Zach Wilson. The only other thing that, and the one thing that is actually kind of disappointing about this draft is that the 49ers cannot fail to take a quarterback. There's no thinking about Kyle Pitts. There's no thinking about a wide receiver. There's no thinking about Penei Sewell. They're locked into a quarterback. So the only question is how much you believe that the people who are telling you that it's Mac Jones are either lying or misled. And that kind of sucks some of the debate out of it, because it's either Justin Fields or not Justin Fields, in which case it is in all likelihood Trey Lance. And, you know, the one thing that sort of is a drag about projecting this draft is that the 49ers don't have a lot of creative options if they wanted to take them. They locked into a quarterback. And the thing is, okay, how many quarterbacks are they likely to take, are in their purview? And it's really only two.
Well, it's at least four. I mean, in general, because as you just said, we don't know for sure that Wilson won't be there. So that's at least an outside possibility. And even if you and I, and I totally agree with you, Ray, the noise around Mac Jones makes me more and more certain he's not the guy. But I think we have to admit that just because you and I feel that way doesn't mean he's not at least part of the conversation. So, I mean, there's at least three guys, if not four, that are in the conversation there, which I think is enough interest for me. Nick, if you were in that spot, who are you taking, and what do you think the Niners will do?
It's got to be Fields to me. And I'd say this, guys, whoever it is, they had to have known they were going to be there all along. There is no secret here as far as the 49ers are concerned to me. I mean, Ray just laid it out. You don't trade all these picks to pick anybody other than a quarterback, and you certainly don't trade all these picks and mortgage your future if you aren't certain that the guy you really want is going to be there. So to me, when you put everything together, it feels like Justin Fields has the game, the athleticism to be able to help instantly and grow into the type of player that Kyle Shanahan needs. So I would be surprised if it were anybody else. And I think that the Niners, either way, they've had their eye on their guy all along. And you don't make that move unless you know you're going to get him.
You know, what's interesting to me about Fields, and I think we're all kind of on the same page as far as this goes, but I can't ignore that he seems to be the best of both worlds when we're talking about quarterback prospects, right? And it's even more noticeable because he's standing next to two guys who are kind of, one's the best of one world and the other's the best of the other world. Here's Mac Jones. You can't find a more productive, professional-looking college quarterback. He supposedly makes all the reads. He's hitting open receivers, which obviously is a prerequisite for NFL quarterback. And, you know, won the national title looking awfully good. On the other hand, here's Trey Lance. Played nobody. Division down. Didn't even play but one game this last year. But, boy, you put him in some tight shorts and have him run around and throw, he's the most impressive thing you've ever seen. And then there's Justin Fields. And all he did was dominate some of the best competition in college football, consistently produce in a college career, and he brings to the table, while maybe not the sheer absurd size of Trey Lance, a ton of measurable physical abilities. It's harder and harder for me to see Justin Fields not being the guy, to sort of the point that you were making. And you know, I would twist what you said a little bit, Nick, in that they may not know for sure Zach Wilson's going second, and if the Jets got crazy and took Fields second, I think the Niners would be perfectly happy with Zach Wilson. But there's no way in my mind that they made that trade still wondering if it could be Mac Jones or Justin Fields or Trey Lance, because you would not give up those assets. And maybe more to the point, I can't get past the fact that you wouldn't give up those assets at all for Mac Jones. You just wouldn't. Because even if you like him as a prospect, he's not the sort of prospect you mortgage your future for. You do that for the shoot the moon, chance to be one of the greatest things you've ever seen prospect. And I don't think anyone sees Mac Jones as that.
No, look, they traded up to three for certainty. That was the most important thing they wanted. And they know exactly who's going ahead of them, because I don't believe you make that trade unless you are absolutely sure, or if you know that it doesn't matter who the Jets take because you're perfectly happy with whoever they don't.
Yeah.
So I mean,
which is possible, right? I mean, that second version is a possibility.
I think it's highly unlikely because I don't even think anybody's bothering to lie about the Jets pick. Because right. for the same reason that nobody's bothering to lie about the Jacksonville pick. They know it's Trevor Lawrence. So it really is Lawrence, Wilson, then dealer's choice. And, you know, there's the projection about who makes the most sense. I mean, Jones doesn't make sense to me because he's sort of like Garoppolo. And if you're happy with Garoppolo, just get some sort of run-of-the-mill backup just in case. You know, if you're not, you want something that's at least moderately different. And it seems to me that Fields is more different in that case than Lance is. Now, the thing I would like most is for them to take Kyle Pitts and make everybody's brains melt. Because that, to me, would be the funniest thing ever. And it would expose the draft for the pile of speculative nonsense that it always is. But the more people who keep saying Mac Jones simply tell me that the more people are out there either gullible or just steal other people's work. Because Mac Jones yeah. doesn't make sense.
Well, and I maybe both of you guys can sort of shed more light on what exactly goes into this by the virtue of the fact that you're both journalists in a way that I would never claim to be. But the sort of leak issue is something that has informed thinking on the Mac Jones part of the story a lot. Because before Kyle and John Lynch took over, the 49ers were a damn sieve. And we could talk about who's responsible, but whoever's responsible, everything leaked out of everywhere in that organization. And we heard during the hiring process that John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan made a point of insisting that nothing leak or they would not sign their deals. And then nothing leaked for the entirety of the Kyle Shanahan-John Lynch regime until all of a sudden right now, on the doorstep of the biggest decision of that regime, every single person in the league believes they know exactly what the 49ers plan to do. That just seems so incongruous to me with what this organization has been all about under this leadership.
Well, that's the other thing, is that this sort of started, you know, with Chris Sims. And he was the guy who, you know, always claims to really sort of, you know what Kyle Shanahan is thinking. They were teammates at Texas. They had this bizarre simpatico that nobody else can possibly have. And I think Kyle Shanahan is a guy who not only keeps his cards close to his chest, he actually nail guns them face down to his shirt. He doesn't let anything get out that he doesn't want out, and he pretty much doesn't want much out at all. So where's this informed speculation? Well, the truth is it's not informed. It's just guesswork that builds on top of earlier guesswork, that builds on top of guesswork before that, which is another reason why I don't think that Mac Jones is the pick, because in a world where everybody's guessing based on almost no information and just a lot of sort of speculating is the best way I can put it, you know, Mac Jones only fits a narrative if you believe that Kyle Shanahan wants the same kind of quarterback that he's had before. And I don't think he does. I think he wants to try to expand, at least in the future, what he can do with this offense.